Tommy Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Pichon. I'm here with the low in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
How are you, sweetie?
It's been a tough week. In general. I think I'm getting used to certain things. You have to adapt. But at the same time, I miss certain things.
Expand on that thought, please.
And interaction with people, meeting more people, going, walking on the street and seeing people and stuff like that without worrying so much about, COVID and all that shit. I just missed it. And at the same time, it's a little scary because you kind of like you're getting used to a new way of living. And, you have to in a way. And I don't know.
I'm seriously concerned about our social skills.
Yes.
Which were already atrophied after a decade of working from home together. But now it's like, oh my God.
I mean,
I'm worried I'm just going to be some snippy,
yes,
defensive person the next time I have to interact with someone in person.
Yeah, but let me just say something so people don't think that we haven't left the house at all. Now, we do leave the house. We go for walks. We go shopping nearby every now and then, stuff like that. But it's more like meeting the whole family. We have a huge family going to New York.
Or seeing friends.
Yeah, seeing friends more often. I mean, we were supposed to go to Fire Island, as we usually do. We didn't do that. And we thought about it, even like, okay, we're going to be on the island. We don't have to interact with anyone, but it's getting there, taking the ferry and the train and everything, that type of stuff. So we couldn't, because we also had the book tour, we were going to go to so many cities, so we didn't feel like we had to come up with a plan for summer or to travel.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was our original plan for the year, was that from March until probably the beginning of July was going to be pretty much nonstop travel. We had dates and cities and all kinds of things lined up, and we talked about it before. It all had to be canceled. But the plan for the year was that our money was going to be spent on that, and we had no plans for a vacation for the summer. In fact, we envisioned a summer where we would just sack out at home with our cats and recover from the book tour. And it really wasn't until honestly July, because I would say all the way up through June, every waking moment was still focused on promoting the book in ways that we could still do it under lockdown, under COVID conditions. It really wasn't until July when Pride Month was over, and in our minds, that was the official end of the initial promotional period for the book. We will never stop promoting this book until the day we die, but the actual initial push, we always had it in our mind, was going to end by July 1st. And it did, more or less. We published a piece in Vice magazine in their Pride issue on June 30th, and that was the last bit of promotional work we did. And it wasn't until July that I realized, God, we have got nothing planned. Like, there's nowhere for us to go. And most of our, if for us, for the, we're just childless urban gays. If we want to do a quick sort of vacation, it's usually to another city, like to our favorite cities. We're not camping gays and, that sort of thing. So we had no options for the summer. We had made no plans, and we didn't even realize it until the very last second that we probably should have made some sort of getaway plan. We're getting caught up on a topic
But that's pretty much it.
The good news is we've had a very busy, busy week.
Yes.
For the first time in many, many, trust us, running this publication, this blog in the current situation has been a full-time job that never stopped. But, for the first time since March, we've had a full week of, celebrity style coverage because, MTV had their VMAs, and they did a very sort of socially distanced, green screened sort of red carpety VMAs, which, all things considered, I think actually worked.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's parts of it that are cheesy, and I have no doubt in 5 years we'll look back on this as an artifact of its time. Like, oh my God, remember the year the VMAs was all socially distanced and Gaga performed in a mask. But it worked much better than a lot of these sort of Zoom, mm-hmm, at home kind of TV specials have been working. And I'm very interested to see what the Emmys do in a couple of weeks. But It yielded a week's worth of red carpet material for us at the same time the Venice Film Festival started. Right. And because, you know, almost every country other than America is doing a lot better on their COVID compliance than, right. than America is doing, they were able to have actual red carpet events and that sort of thing, socially distanced and so on. But it was full on red carpetry from people like Tilda Swinton and Cate Blanchett. Right. We couldn't have asked for a better week. And
I just want to add that I do follow them, the stylist, on Instagram. And they, and, you know, I was reading Cate Blanchett's stylist post about Venice and the festival. And, you know, they are following all the social distance and, you know, rules and, you know, doing everything they need to do. So it's working. In a way, it is working. And, you know, we're happy.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. They could all test positive in a week.
Well,
so.
That's the thing. You know, that's the thing. When you think things are getting a little better, then you hear about Dwayne Johnson, you know, whole family testing positive. And now Robert Pattinson's while he's shooting Batman. So it's like, okay, it's not over yet.
No, of course it's not over.
And
But we're happy to have the content.
Yes. And very much.
It was nice to stretch those muscles again and limber up after 6 months of not really doing that kind of, that level of red carpet coverage. Oh, Miss Mimu is walking around making sure she's being heard,
yes.
as per the usual. As I say every week, she gets all excited because this is the time for mouth noises. Let's all go in the dining room and make mouth noises. It's time. She doesn't know what it is, but she just knows she loves
it. She's very loud.
Anyway, but it was nice to get right back into that groove again, and it's been fun. It leaves me hopeful that we can get to something close to what we used to call normal again at some point down the line.
Yeah, it's funny because I usually get annoyed getting a ton of emails when a festival happens or like an awards or whatever. I get very annoyed because we get a ton of emails and then it's all about like what they're wearing, IDing, whatever, shoes and jewelry usually. But this time I was like, oh, the emails are showing up. And I actually replied to one of the PR people and I said, oh, I miss these emails. And she was like, laughed and she said, well, I miss writing them. So, yeah, it's kind of like, I wouldn't say back to normal, but it's nice to be able. I mean, it's little things that you guys don't even, you know, obviously you're like, what are you talking about? But like inserting tags, like, oh, my God, I'm inserting a red carpet tag here, you
right.
know, in this post. Like it's been forever, or an awards tag, that type of stuff that we're just like, oh, my God. Yeah, I think it's anyway.
But no, it has been fun to be back in the game. We know that, you know, this is a momentary blip. There's going to be more red carpet stuff with the Emmys. And there's this general sense of celebrities are stepping out in front of cameras more and more in these outfits under these sort of weirdly... I'm sorry, the cats are fighting right at my feet. Sorry. These sort of weirdly socially distanced photo calls and stuff like that. But it's so I don't think we're going to be fully back to anything until 2021, the sort of coverage that we used to provide. But there are more options now.
Right.
And it feels like a little bit of a floodgate has been opened. We had like that thing with... And that's the other thing is that we may not be having celebrity red carpet events to any great effect in America, but there's, you know, they'll be going on in Great Britain and Italy and, you
right.
know, Australia.
Right.
And we may likely be covering those more often than we cover American stars, at least for the foreseeable future. Anyway, even that was not something I wanted to go off on. Real quick, just want to acknowledge in this week's podcast, Chadwick Boseman's passing this week, which really shocked the world, shocked us. And I feel like obviously the most poignant and important commentary coming in the wake of his death is coming from Black writers. Of course it is. So I don't feel a responsibility to open my big white mouth and say much here, except to say, first off, that his this was not like a typical celebrity death, because
right.
Chadwick had achieved, and I don't think people realized it, until they faced his death and they realized this, he had really become a cultural figure of some great importance, a significant cultural and in some respects historical figure to American Black history. Not just because he played Black Panther, although that is a really big part of it. That is the biggest part of it, in
right.
fact.
That's how it started,
the
actually.
Effect yeah. that portrayal had on the culture at large and on Black Americans and Black people worldwide just cannot be measured. But he also has that history of playing, of choosing roles, playing iconic Black men from, American men from history. So Thurgood Marshall he did, and Jackie Robinson. And I have a very, very fond memory of seeing 42 with my father in the theater. My father passed away last year. My father was an enormous lifelong fan of the Brooklyn Dodgers because he grew up in Brooklyn in the 40s and the 50s. And he was a huge fan of Jackie Robinson. And here he was, like, I don't know, 81 or so years old in the theater with me and clapping at all of the plays that were being portrayed on camera as if he was watching an old Brooklyn Dodgers game. And he said that later, how much he loved that film. Anyway, Chadwick means a lot to a lot of people in a lot of different ways because he played such important characters. And his importance and his standing as a cultural and historic figure to Black Americans is not even, you're not even able to measure that yet. That's something that's probably only going to grow over time. The legend of him will probably grow over time. And then briefly, just want to say his, we wrote a post this week acknowledging and putting into context his work on the red carpet.
Right.
He has redefined how celebrity males dress. You wouldn't have your Timothy Chalamets or maybe even your Ezra Millers if you didn't have Chadwick Boseman out there really switching things up and changing our ideas of what menswear should look like, especially on famous men. So that's it. Just a tip of the hat to that and an acknowledgement that a major, major cultural milestone has been passed with his death. And we're going to look back on it. I have no doubt that he is going to just rise as this iconic cultural figure. You know, I was going to start making comparisons to other ones, and I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to do that. Just wanted to acknowledge that.
I just thought it was beautiful, and we retweeted a video of kids very excited to see the movie. It's in a school, right? A bunch of kids, they find
right,
out
right,
that
right.
They're going to see the movie, and they're clapping, they're dancing, they're so excited. And that's when you really get it with that visual that it meant so much for so many kids to see a Black person as a superhero in a movie theater. So, you know, that was the chance, and it happened, and it's not going to happen again, not with him. And,
right.
Hopefully with somebody else, but not with
him. I really hope they don't recast T'Challa. I think that would be a mistake to put another actor in that role. They have Shuri right there, very popular Letitia Wright portrayal. If they want to do a second Black Panther movie, my suggestion would be to put her in the costume. They did it in the comics, so
right.
We'll see where that goes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all right, moving on. It's been a sort of tense and sad opening few minutes of our podcast here. So let's move on to Meghan and Harry, who are getting their dollar bills.
I know.
And we're also later in the podcast going to have a review of the HBO Max series that dropped yesterday. The first three episodes dropped of Raised by Wolves. It's a hardcore science fiction. First two episodes are directed by Ridley Scott. We're going to give our thoughts on those in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, Meghan and Harry.
Interesting.
So they signed a Netflix deal this week that reports are that it's like $150 million.
Wow.
And they're going to develop yada, yada, yada. I mean, I am not... I'm not upset. I do not care how they make their money. I just don't care. I acknowledge that maybe some people feel that they have a responsibility to earn their money in a certain way, but honestly, I don't know why. Why? They gave up their responsibilities as royals. They're living in a completely different country. Like, I'm not sure why I'm not sure there's any good argument against them making this deal. Having said that, it's a little tacky. and you know what? I'll say this right now. but I hope this doesn't make me unpopular. I wasn't 100% in love with the Obama deal when that was announced either. I was like, okay, that's something you can do, and you guys certainly deserve some money, but okay, that's not how I would think of president and first lady should move on to the next phase, but okay. And I kept that mostly to myself because honestly, it feels like it's a very unpopular opinion. Nobody seems to say it. Fine, I own that. But just so you know, when I say that Meghan and Harry are a little, this deal is like a little money grabby, a little tacky, I did kind of feel the same way about the Obamas. Sorry.
I think they mean to do well. I think they do have ideas and plans and you know, to change the world and, you know, Mother Teresa.
Okay, can
style.
I just read their statement? Because this is when I was like, no, let me just read it.
Okay.
Him. Our lives, both independent of each other and as a couple, have allowed us to understand the power of the human spirit, of courage, resilience, and the need for connection. Through our work with diverse communities and their environments, to shining a light on people and causes around the world, our focus will be on creating content that informs but also gives hope. As new parents, those are the magic words, as new parents, making inspirational family programming is also important to us, as is powerful storytelling through a truthful and relatable Netflix deal. We're talking, people. Okay, we're not, like, calm down, everyone. We are pleased to work with Ted and the team at Netflix, who's, this is the part where I was like, oh my God, whose unprecedented reach will help us share impactful content that unlocks action. What does that even mean? What does that even mean? Impactful content that unlocks action. Look, get your dollar bills. Happy to see you do it. But please don't act like you're changing the world with this deal.
Well,
that's the part where I can't roll my eyes hard enough.
Like that about them, that they feel that they're going to change the world. And, it, you know, it's fine if you feel that way. You do have a platform. And if you want to help somehow the planet?
Yeah, I never begrudge their
charity. That's fine, but they are. I've always thought that they're both attention seekers. They are. They seek attention. They love the you know, the spotlight and the press and the media. And I don't care what they say. They do.
I said that on Twitter about Harry one time, that I said he was you know, he was addicted to the spotlight. That was the exact words that I used. And oh my God, the Sussex squad came out for my head. But I'm like, okay, he has literally been world famous since birth. Born to one of the most famous women of the 20th century. Like, what part of that do you think led him to be a quiet, unassuming? Like, of course, every member, even the queen herself on some level, is addicted to the attention the role brings because they don't know any other way to live.
Right.
The queen expects that when she enters a room, everyone will act a certain way, be a certain way, to defer toward her a certain way.
Right.
And yes, I know she kind of loathes being queen and has loathed it her whole life. But I also think if it ended tomorrow, she wouldn't know what to do with herself. And I think that's true of all of them. So to say that a member, Miss Miu Miu is behind me attacking.
Our cat is.
Why do we still leave that scratching post in the dining room when we're working?
Anyway.
Listen to her. Oh,
yeah,
my God. You
I'm
think
sorry,
she was anyway. Excavating something. This cat. Jesus Christ. The most attention-seeking animal I've ever seen in my life. She is the Prince Harry of cats. Anyway.
She's very funny and vocal.
Like I said, I don't begrudge them their money. I knew that they were going to do something Hollywood-y in their work. I knew, I mean, why else would they move to Southern California? Like, obviously, her connections in the industry and his love of celebrity were going to factor into what their plans were going to be. Like I said, good for them, but I do roll my eyes a little bit at it, and I can't imagine I will be watching, well, first off, the children's programming, I won't be watching at all. Maybe if they do some interesting documentaries, I'll catch it, but, you know, whatever. Good for them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think they're, you know, if they, as they claim that, you know, they don't like the press or want to avoid the press, that's just, it's just going to get worse because now they're going to be on TV all the time.
I don't think they're going to be doing stuff on TV.
Oh,
they're producing,
just producing
stuff. Yeah,
anyway,
they're not doing any on-camera stuff.
We'll see. But
no,
anyway, it's interesting
that.
And they're making a ton of money and I would say yes too. So for the money, yeah.
So the rumors now were that the Queen didn't know about it, and everyone and
they never knew about it, right?
Yeah, but this is all unnamed sources in the palace. Blah, 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 you
they
know,
never knew anything about
those it. People have already proven themselves to be not trustworthy when it comes to talking about Harry and Meghan. That's why they left the frickin' country. But apparently, like, the palace hasn't signed off on this, and the palace is supposed to sign off on any money-making deals they do, which, again, I feel is, like, complete and total bullshit. Why does your grandmother have a say in how you make your money?
Interesting.
Again, if you're in the line of succession, which technically he is, but he's so far down that line, he knows damn well he's never, ever getting near that throne. So, why? Why should he be held to these weird standards like we have to clear everything with grandma first? Like, why? Why? By now, I'm not British and blah, 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 whatever. But I think the news is just good celebrity goss. I'm not going to treat it as anything bigger than that. I won't be watching probably most of the stuff that they do.
Right. The bottom line for
And it confirms what you know, we defend Harry and Meghan a lot on this podcast and on our site. But that doesn't mean I don't see them. I don't view them as perfect. That's for sure. And the idea that, yes, they may be a little money hungry and they want a certain lifestyle. Yes. And they probably are addicted to fame. All of that is true. Without acknowledging any of the weird racist shit that was thrown at her or this idea that they have to uphold the monarchy when they're not even part of it in any real way. That I all reject. But yeah, okay, they're very Hollywood. They're very touchy-feel. Like that statement, I was like, ooh, yeah, that sounds like them. That definitely sounds like them. Impacting change and hope and unlocking action. And all right, okay, you're making money. Let's just leave it at that.
I do think they have a huge platform. They have a voice. They have the power and the money now. So yeah, they might do good. They might do, you know, good things. But it's interesting to see them going against what they, you know, what they kind of criticized all along, you know, the whole media press and everything and I don't know, attention and all that. It keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But we'll see.
I don't think, you bring this up and I tend not to agree with you on this. I don't agree that they complained about attention or that they stated that they didn't want attention. This is the thing that's always thrown back at them whenever they do anything that gains attention. I don't recall them saying that. They didn't like the press lying about them. They didn't like the press creating stories about them. And they didn't like being harassed by the press and being asked to put up with it. But this idea that, oh, they said they didn't want attention and they moved to California. And I'm like, well, they never said they didn't want attention. I think they both understand they can't escape that level of attention. They just want to control it. Whether or not you agree with that or not.
But that's impossible to do. And I think
I don't think so.
No, I think the celebrities that survive in this industry are the ones who kind of know how to navigate those waters, you know, and then just like, you know, all right. They're saying,
I don't know, people like Beyonce, people like George Clooney, they have full control over their image and what gets said about them.
I guess.
You can do it at a certain level of fame.
Well, yeah, at a certain level.
Well, they're at that level.
Right. Maybe that's why they need the money.
Yeah.
To get to that level.
I don't begrudge them. Like all the stuff that, right, how their mansion has something like 19 bathrooms. No, I don't really see the need why they need 19 bathrooms, but.
They have 19 bathrooms in the house?
Okay, and how many do William and Kate have in their Kensington Palace?
I'm just like, surprised. In general, I don't understand why anyone would need 19 bathrooms, but that's just me. Anyway. I'm just surprised.
That's all I have to say about them. I don't care about their 19 bathrooms. And every time you hear about that, you have to ask, well, how many do the other members of the family have? And how come we never hear that? They get singled out for shit.
I agree with that.
It's like every time Michelle Obama stepped on a plane, we had to hear about how our taxes were paying for her plane rides. Oh, but every first lady did the same thing. You know, it's that sort of thing.
And now we're playing for...
We're not doing that. Anyway. Moving on, John Boyega.
Yes.
What do you have
to
say about John Boyega?
It was interesting.
Let me just set the tone. Ahead. He did an interview in British GQ where he unleashed on racism in Hollywood generally, racism in society generally, and racism in the Star Wars community specifically, and how bad his experiences were dealing with racist fans and being sidelined by the directors and writers of the franchise. Go.
Yeah, it's interesting because when he protested, he marched for Black Lives Matter, right? I think he did somewhere.
He did. He gave a wonderful speech in Hyde Park in June.
Right. So it's funny how everything comes together. Like when he did that, we're like, oh, that's awesome, interesting. And then now the interview, then you can kind of understand where his mind was at, I guess.
Right.
And then he posted on Instagram or Twitter or both. Talking about the interview, that it's not a witch hunt. It's just him expressing how he felt, expressing his, talking about his experience in general, making the movies. And so I read the interview. We posted the interview on our site.
Parts of it.
Yeah, parts of it. Because, you know, you're not allowed to post the whole interview, by the way. You they give you certain parts that you can insert in a post. Because, you know, the goal is that you go to their site. But there were interesting bits. I don't know much about Star Wars or Star Trek or any kind of movie like that. But it was fascinating because, A, he's the first black stormtrooper, right? Ever?
Yeah, don't.
Is that
you trying to talk about Star Wars? I'll get to all that.
Anyway, you get to all that.
He's the first black.
He's the first
forget
one,
it.
Fighter or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I thought it was interesting his conversation, his statements about how he was treated, and because we cover, I'm going to talk more about red carpet and covering a movie and things like that. It's interesting when. Reading about all of the experience he had, and Kelly Marie Tran also, about how they were treated during press, and how they were treated differently because he's black. So it was fascinating to me, and I believe in it. And it's funny because if you're not part of it, you don't know any of that. I mean, you see the red carpet, you see them posing, but you have no idea what happened, 5 minutes before they stepped on that red carpet. So it's interesting. And also he mentioned, which I thought we've had this conversation before, and I've actually had, we've had added links to articles about it in our Tea Lounge post about, he talks about his stylist, and I don't want to name his stylist because sometimes celebrities are confused. I don't know if he meant his personal stylist or for magazines or editorials or whatever. So I don't want to name his stylist. But he talks about his stylist cringing at some choices he made to wear on the red carpet. And that's fascinating to me because, and it's an interesting conversation because you hire a stylist because they are professionals and they kind of know how to highlight your body, your characters, your features. I mean, all that, and to make you look good.
Right.
So it's interesting that, but at the same time, a good stylist will also take suggestions from you because you're the one getting dressed, and you like certain styles, certain things that So it's your job as a stylist to incorporate that. And apparently, the stylist didn't do that. But at the same time, I do want to remind people that it's the whole styling for the red carpet. It's way bigger than that. It's also the movie industry, in a way, forcing an image. So you're working from all these different angles here. It's the celebrity making their choices. They want to wear certain things, but at the same time, they have the help of the stylist. But also the stylist is being pressured sometimes by the movie industry.
Right.
To dress that particular star, actor or actress a certain way because they wanted to impose or they want to present a certain image. So
it sounds like he had a terrible, complicated. It sounds like he had a terrible time with the Disney machine specifically, if not Hollywood generally. He called out Disney specifically.
Right.
For how he was treated as an actor in their stable of stars, but also how his character was treated within the sort of Star Wars mythology. It's a shame because he seems to have a very poor seems to have had a very poor experience with The Last Jedi, which is the most controversial film in the final trilogy. But in my opinion, it's also the best film in the trilogy because it attempted to do things that were outside the box for Star Wars. But in doing so, he made very good points that I had never considered. I have always defended Return of the Jedi. I've always defended its director, Rian Johnson, for taking risks with the franchise that J.J. Abrams then sort of shut down when he did the follow-up film and tied everything up in a neat bow, in a very Star Wars-y kind of bow. I hated The Rise of Skywalker. I hated the final film. But from the perspective of him as an actor, I don't know that he was specifically trashing Rian Johnson. I don't think he trashed him by name. But he did trash the idea that his character was so sidelined in the second film in favor of a Rey and Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver driven story. I hadn't considered how much he felt that way and how much it must have felt like that to him. To my eyes, when I was watching the trilogy unfold, this new trilogy, I did feel right from the get-go that they had thrown way too many characters that were had largely undefined backstories at us, but they were focusing almost entirely on her, on Rey. In other words, I felt that from the first film that I was like, well, who is this Oscar Isaac character? I mean, we don't really know anything about him. He just shows up and he checks off these sort of Star Wars-y boxes. John Boyega's character, I thought they tried to fill in a background. I mean, they definitely gave him a background, way more of a background actually than any of the new characters. We know what his background was before we, you know, we don't know what Poe Dameron's was, and Rey's had to be filled in at the last second. We all hated it when they did, but anyway, it's a different story. I feel like they established Finn as an interesting take on an archetypal Star Wars character, the stormtrooper who throws down his gun and joins the resistance. That's a great character. And then in the second film, the one where he feels things started to go wrong, I can see that idea where his character was given a story for sure, but it felt very separate from the action of the film. And the same thing was true with the final film in that, you know, Finn had some sort of story, but it definitely wasn't the central story. And I think he has legitimate complaints about that from an actor point of view, but especially as a black actor in a Disney production that does not center black faces all that much. I mean, it was Billy Dee Williams before him, and that was almost 40 years ago. That's not true. I mean, I know Samuel L. Jackson was in the prequel films and everything, but even so, these were side characters mostly, and Finn, from the beginning, from his introduction, was not pitched as a side character. He was pitched as more or less the new trilogy of characters, replacing Luke, Leia, and Han. It was going to be Finn, Poe, and Rey. But it really didn't shake out that way because it became the Rey show almost immediately by the second prequel, the second film. And it just got caught up in the idea of her identity and which side of the Force she was going to, blah, blah, blah. So, I don't know. I feel complicated about it because I absolutely understand and would never argue with him about his experiences. And I do agree that Finn needed more of a story. On the other hand, I feel like the film that he most trashed in his discussion was easily the best film in the trilogy. And the mistake was not in centering Finn's story more in that film and then following up with a better story in the final film. But then generally speaking, he's had a terrible time with the fandom of the show, which like all online fandoms has you know, a cabal, an arm of the fandom who will always act terribly. I don't care what fandom you're talking about. Every fandom has them. Star Wars has an especially loud, large and egregious bad acting fandom, and like so many science fiction fandoms, there's just this group in each one who completely misses the point. Like there's Star Trek fans who really don't think the shows should embrace diversity or have politics in them, and I'm just like, what? That is literally the whole point of Star Trek. And the same thing with the fans of Star Wars. There are sometimes the ones, the really nasty ones, it just sounds like you didn't get what this story was about at all, or what this franchise is about.
That's a very good point. Yes.
So I again would never argue with him on that. Fandom acts. Every fandom has terrible actors that do not get, I don't know, reined in any way by the rest of that fandom. And it's the same thing with Drag Race. Like, God forbid a black queen wins Drag Race, because then the fandom all goes piles on her for taking the crown away from a white queen. Not the entire fandom, not even the majority of the fandom, but it is an ongoing problem with online fandoms.
And sometimes it's bad, and I'm not saying, it's still bad, but sometimes it's not as too bad, but in some cases, it's just out of control, like with Kelly Marie Tran, for example.
He brought up Kelly Marie Tran. They drove her off of social media. Yeah, they were cruel about her looks. They were cruel about her her race. And she, too, had a terrible time because, for some reason, there's this core of Star Wars fans who thinks it's some sort of white power fantasy, or I don't know.
So reading the
male power fantasy.
Reading the interview, and I just want to add one more thing that I forgot. He also talked about the getting his hair done, and that they hired a stylist, and apparently it was a white stylist, and he claimed that he knew he had experience with black hair, but he didn't. And
this is a common story among black actors
and
in Hollywood.
Yes, and John Boyega got very frustrated with it, the whole situation, and that's why. And I repeat, we added some articles about that in the Tea Lounge post of makeup artists and hair stylists. African-American one especially, talking about how frustrating it is. And, you know, and why not? I mean, I understand that, you know, you have to give, you know, jobs to everybody. But if it's, in this case specifically, why not hire an African-American person or a black person?
You have to hire makeup and hair artists who understand how to work with black hair and skin.
So
99% of the time that it means hiring a black makeup artist or a black hair artist.
I think the main thing that I got from the post, which is sad, is that you as an artist, as an actor or a musician or any art form, you get these opportunities that are make changes in the industry, and you're excited about it because you're the first African American or you're the first Asian of whatever. And you get this opportunity, you get so excited, and then you're stuck in a situation where you feel the pressure to say yes to everything and never question anything. And then at the same time, when it's all over, the hurricane is over, you kind of question what happened, and you're confused and sometimes frustrated that you didn't have a voice or you didn't have any opportunity to, sort of say anything about the whole thing. And I think that how he feels, in a way, it was in a way all this frustration bottled up in a way. And then they finally had an interview and he felt the need.
I hope gets a lot of work out of this. Right. I hope the industry rallies around him instead of shunning him, because it has a history of shunning people who speak a little too loudly or don't toe the party line. So I'm fully supportive of everything he said. I'm saddened to hear that he had such a terrible time on the one film that I think redeems the whole third trilogy. But that's, I'm looking at it as a viewer, not as the actor in the project. Moving on to other items of science fiction.
I know.
This is the Sci-Fi Podcast this week. HBO Max's series Raised by Wolves dropped its first three episodes yesterday. It will drop three episodes every Thursday. I'm not entirely sure how many episodes there are. I actually haven't looked that up. We have watched the first six. And I like the reviews that have come. We were going to review it this week, but we got flooded with red carpet content and we were like, no, let's go with that. So we're going to review the first three episodes that are out, and we may do a write-up next week when the next three are out, because I had a very different feel for the series in the second three than I did in the first three. It's a great launch for a science fiction series. First off, the first two episodes are directed by Ridley Scott, mm-hmm. who directed Prometheus and Alien and Blade Runner. The man's science fiction bona fides are well established, and he has such an eye for making beautiful, mm-hmm. like science fiction, that's absolutely beautiful to look at. His sense of art direction yes. and composition and all that is stunning. And all of that is in the first two episodes. And after that, other directors take over, and you don't lose that sense of grandeur. Well, actually, you kind of do.
You kind of do.
The first two episodes are just full of just breathtaking vistas and incredible special effects. The first three episodes have dropped. I'm not giving major spoilers, but we're going to talk about things that happened. And mm-hmm. so if you really don't want to know yet, you should go watch them and then come back to this part later. So the story it could have gone either way with this production. It could have been like, wow, they took the most classic basic science fiction tropes and they really put them out there in a new way or in such a high quality way that it doesn't matter that they're such old science fiction tropes, but it didn't quite go in that direction. It feels that way in the beginning because you've got Ridley Scott. And also because you have a lead actress who is...
Amanda Collin.
I think she's going to probably become a star. Yes. If this show becomes a hit, if it has a following, it will make her a star. Because of her level of performance is just... You can't take your eyes off her. She plays an android. And in some respects, her performance checks off all the boxes you would check off of an android story in science fiction. But in other ways, she brings an intensity to the performance that you cannot take your eyes off of her. And she looks, she just looks otherworldly. She doesn't look human.
Robotic, yes. Yeah,
and it's not that she's wearing prosthetics or crazy makeup. She's really not. A lot of it is just her physicality. She's got, mm-hmm. I would call, a dancer's body. She's very tall, very lean and thin. And she's in these skin-tight silver bodysuits through the whole thing with an Annie Lennox crew cut. But some of it is simply performance, where she is so intense mm-hmm. that it really takes you back. Credit to her. I would not have minded the fact that there are no new storyline, and there are a lot of storylines that unfold in the first six episodes. This thing goes in directions that you might not be able to tell from the first episode. But every direction it goes is a direction, if you're any sort of science fiction fan, it's a road you've traveled. You know, it's refugees from a dying Earth landing on a new planet. It's androids and versus humans and, this sort of tech versus religion war going on. There are alien creatures. There's religious fundamentalism. None of that's new. And by the fifth or sixth episode, I really had to realize that I still enjoy it, but it's not, I cannot, as a reviewer or a critic, I cannot maintain this position that what you're looking at is fresh. It's not. I wish it may pick up after the sixth episode. I'm giving this a solid BB+, if you really need to know. It is, if you're a science fiction fan, I do feel it's worth your time. I think if you're a science fiction fan, you'll see a lot of the same things that I saw. It owes a lot to Battlestar Galactica. It owes a lot to the Alien films. It owes a lot to Dune, to the point where I was like, okay, enough desert shots, enough religious fundamentalism, enough of that. But I still want to see the story unfold, and it goes places, and I still want to see where it winds up. I'm still enraptured by her performance, and she's not the only one. Travis Fimmel, who was in Vikings, is in it. I don't know that he's my favorite, but he is good. And most of the rest of the cast, I really don't know. In fact, I would say the entire cast, there's no weak part in the cast.
Mm-hmm.
They're all good in the roles that they're given. I especially like the woman who plays Travis Fimmel's wife.
Right.
She's an Irish actress who I don't know her name right off the bat. When the series wants to, it'll pull back and show you how expensive it looks, because there are, especially in those first couple of episodes, it looks as expensive as a, you know, $250 million film. The money was put into it. I will say that after that, it sort of drops off tremendously, and the art direction doesn't really reach those heights again. You're spending a lot of time in huts in the desert. So even though it is a science fiction show, it has a tendency to strip the science fiction parts away from it in terms of its aesthetic. Why don't you jump in? Because I'm doing a lot of talking. Don't make big eyes at me.
I'm not a sci-fi person, but I appreciate Ridley Scott's work. I think he's phenomenal. And I do wish he had directed the whole thing. I always have a problem with these series that are directed by more than one person, more than one director. I don't know. It's just, I don't like it. It's not consistent to me. So the first two episodes, as you mentioned, are phenomenal to me. Phenomenal. Beautiful to look at. The costumes are great. And it does feel like hardcore sci-fi. And I'm not a fan of sci-fi. I'm not, you know. But I do like Dune. I read the book. So I did appreciate all that. The colors and the visuals and the costumes in general are beautiful. The little kid, the costumes he wear are absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, and her performance is, she plays Mother, and she's absolutely great. Amanda,
like a lot of Ridley Scott science fiction, it is obsessed with themes of motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
And how it intersects with technology. You saw that in Alien, you saw that in Blade Runner, you saw that in Prometheus. He's just, there's certain things that he's really obsessed with. And the setup is that, I'll tell you the setup, because actually the setup is good, but as it unfolds, it's like, okay, it's not as original as I thought. And this is all in the first 15, 20 minutes of the first episode. Two androids land a very small ship on a uninhabited planet and immediately set up a camp. And it's a male android and a female android, ostensibly. I don't know if androids technically have gender, but they are male-presenting and female-presenting androids. And immediately they set up a base and I don't know. They seem to have... Oh, yeah, they had frozen embryos. They basically unfreeze the embryos, and the female android gestates them for... There's six of them, gestates them, and then they are birthed. And then these two androids spend the next 10 or 12 years raising these six children. We come to find out that they were tasked with this because the world... Earth was dying, and a scientist... basically sent them on this ship to get them to do this, even though there was an arc of survivors coming behind them. But there was a war on Earth, and the survivors that are coming in this arc are all religious fundamentalists, and the scientist who sent them there, the androids there, was an atheist. There was this big religion versus atheism war on Earth. The religious people won. It's taking them much longer to get to the planet because they have to come in a bigger ship with a life support system, and the androids didn't need any of that, so they got there 12 years early. So then the Ark shows up full of religious fundamentalists who hate androids and hate atheists, and then that's the setup right there. And it's a good setup. And not only that, but Mother, the android, goes crazy, completely wackadoo crazy, and turns out to be basically this super omnipotent android. So there's a lot, and that all happens in the first episode. And the turn that the story takes in the last 15 minutes of the first episode, I was like, what the hell? Totally unexpected. And it does have a knack for doing that as a TV show, as where it's going along a certain way, and suddenly it's a left turn, and you could not have predicted it was going to go in that direction. There is a lot to recommend this show if you're a science fiction fan. The reviews are very mixed, but the ones who love it say, "Oh, this has the potential to become the next science fiction classic, like Battlestar Galactica, or so on." And then the ones that that are not giving such rave reviews are more or less saying what I'm saying, which is that it's good, but it's basic. In the end, it's very pretty, but it's basic science fiction. And an argument could be made that, like a lot of science fiction, it's a boy story with not many female voices in it. And the main female voice is a crazy android called Mother, which doesn't speak to the gender politics of it all that well. So as a female science fiction fan, you might not find what you're looking for in this one, because it's very, very boy story. And ladies are crazy mother robots with superpowers. So, I got all the way up. I saw the first six episodes. It goes in crazy directions in the next six. And I mean, the next three that will drop next week. And it has it's a lot like Battlestar Galactica. When you watch those first few episodes of the show, you can tell, wow, they have a mythology. There is a whole mythology that's already built into the story from the beginning. And we're just going to watch it unfold as the story unfolds. And Raised by Wolves is very much like that, where you can tell you're only scratching the surface of whatever story it is they're planning to tell you. And it takes twists and turns. And by the time you're on the fourth or fifth episode, there is a lot going on. There are a lot of characters, a lot of agendas, a lot of competing backstories. And a lot of questions about child rearing, about survival, about religion. I mean, all the best science fiction will ask questions that it, you know, sometimes cannot answer about the basics of human existence. And this is no different. It does do that. So, like I said, solid B+ on my part. But if you're a super hardcore science fiction fan, a lot of this will feel familiar. And if you're not a science fiction fan, this might be a little too hardcore for your tastes. This isn't Westworld. It's full-on hardcore science fiction. Anyway, right, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I just I'm the fact that they dropped three episodes already, it always makes me a little concerned, because it means that maybe there I don't know.
No, that was the plan. It's three episodes a week, yeah. As far as I know. Yeah.
But I, like I said, I'm not a sci-fi fan, not a hardcore one.
You were enraptured.
But I was just in love with the show. I'm a huge fan of a Russian director called Tarkovsky. I love his work, Solaris, for example, and it has that feel.
Yes.
And I like it. I don't mind that it's slow or it takes forever to go to the next scene. I never had a problem with that kind of stuff. So
there's a point probably in the middle of those three episodes, probably around episodes 3 and 4, if I remember correctly, where it's just a lot of people walking through a desert and talking. And it does tend to slow down at that point. And there's a whole sojourn that happens that when it was over, I was like, I don't think this added anything, and we wasted almost two episodes on it. Like, I think we could have avoided this whole trip completely. So it's good, but it's not perfect. And I think to the hardcore fan, it takes a little time. You're going to have to commit to it. But I'll say this. If you're not captured by it in the first episode, maybe don't. Like, because honestly, I think that's some of the best parts of it.
Right.
And the setup is great. And if you're not feeling it, then I don't think it's going to convince you in the second or third episode. I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong.
I enjoyed it very much.
Since this dropped yesterday, we're assuming that some of you may have caught some of it already. So would love to hear some feedback on our review here. Drop it in the comments on the post for this week's podcast. What else? I think we have run down our list. Megan, John Boyega, Chadwick Boseman.
That's a long.
Raised by Wolves. We sort of cycled quickly through all of them. We have to get back to our busy, busy week of red carpet posting. But, and our Canada's Drag Race finale post just went up.
Yes. And I'm very happy with the winner.
Yeah, they picked the right girl. Happy with that. And I think the show slowly improved on its way through its first season. But read the review, because it still has problems with its judging panel. And unfortunately, the one judge that was most harassed by the fans and who didn't deserve that harassment is nonetheless still the one judge that needs to go. Sorry, JBC. Anyway, kittens, thank you for
thank you so much.
Listening to our cartoon voices and downloading us once again. Please like us on Facebook or Twitter, on Instagram, like or follow us. Please consider buying our book, Legendary Children, The First Decade of RuPaul's Drag Race and the Last Century of Queer Life. And if you have bought it, consider posting a review somewhere on Goodreads or Amazon or something like that. Or even better, consider buying another copy as a gift for some friend who loves Drag Race or loves queer history. Until then, we'll be back next week. Until when? I don't even know. That was a bad segue. Until when? Until you buy our next book, we're not doing another podcast. We will see you again, or you will hear us again next week when we come back to talk about anything that passes in front of our eyes or passes in front of our desks. Thank you once again for all
Thank
your support,
you,
kittens.
Darlings.
We love you. We mean it. Bye-bye.